Religion has many victims, and these are the stories of how they survived. Welcome back to The Awakening, everyone. I am so excited to be back with you guys again this week. We have a really incredible guest with us here, so we cannot wait to get into this show. We are getting to sit down with the Naked Pastor, aka David Hayward, today. He is famous and his artwork is known all over the world. He has touched lives in so many spaces that we didn't even think could be reached. So we are so excited to be here with him today. Welcome in, everyone. Welcome in, David.
Thank you. And I am your co-host, Tamara, or aka Jezebel. So thank you for agreeing to come on to the interview today. It is greatly needed and much appreciated. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thanks so much. It's funny, usually people say David Hayward, aka Naked Pastor, but you said Naked Pastor, aka
And that's
I am
because
more known as
I knew you as the Naked Pastor before I ever knew you as David. And that's exactly how I found David. It was through his art. And, you know, we were talking just before we started recording this show, but he was an instrumental part of my own deconstruction journey. So for me to be able to sit down and have this conversation with him today is such an honor. Like, we really are in the presence of greatness today. So we are so grateful to be here with you. So, David, I just got to ask, you know, what did your background look like? Were you raised in the Christian faith, or how did you become a Christian?
I was born into an Anglican family. So, like, my dad was from England and Church of England, you know, the whole thing. So I was baptized as a baby in the Anglican Church and all that. Grew up in and around the church. My mom and dad, before I came along, got saved at a Billy Graham crusade in Toronto. I'm Canadian, by the way, and that's where I was born, Toronto. And I live in Canada now, but thank God. No.
Yes, no, it is good for you. You don't want to be here. Okay. Know what's going on. It's not good.
So I grew up all around the church. We moved around a lot. We weren't devoted or dedicated to any one denomination. We went to whatever church my mom and dad wanted to go to when they wanted to go to it. But it wasn't until I was in my teens that my family got serious about the church. And we all started going to a Baptist church. And that's where I sort of became officially born again, in the Baptist church.
Yeah.
And then we switched to Pentecostal. I ended up going to a Pentecostal Bible college in the States. And then I went to an evangelical seminary, Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in Boston area. And then McGill for another diploma in ministry, and so on and so forth. Got ordained in the Presbyterian Church and ended up in the Vineyard Church. And then I left the ministry in 2010. So I've been around the block. I've been, I call myself my own ecumenical movement because I've been everywhere.
Listen, when you go as far as Pentecostal and Episcopalian or whatever you said, you've really gone to both extremes of the spectrum.
Full-on Calvinist, Reformed theology, Presbyterian, and then Pentecostal and Vineyard. You know, they're opposite ends of the spectrum, really.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know,
I was at home in all of them.
Yeah. And you've seen all sides of it, too. You know, gives you such a better perspective on the things that do present themselves in every single one of those denominations, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the harm that is still perpetuated in those different spaces. And that was a lot like me. Like, my dad was a Church of God pastor, and then we ended up in an Assemblies of God church, and then ended up evangelical. And it was like all these different denominations, but the core things were still the same. The manipulation, the abuse, you know, those are all still the same. The fear, that was all present in every single one of those denominations. So when people say, you know, it's not all churches, well, if your church is based on fear, it's your church too, right?
Right.
So,
right.
And it was because of those experiences, though, that me, same way, my eyes were open to the harm that was universal in many different spaces, different denominations. You know, we know there's over 40,000 of them now, right? So that's crazy.
Right.
So what took you from the place of, you know, you decided to go into being a pastor, right? So What was that like for you being a pastor, and when did your eyes start opening up or things start to shift for you?
Yeah, well, just before I answer that, like just back to your previous point, like I often have people when I talk about spiritual abuse, it's one of my topics because I've experienced it and was involved in a system that perpetuated it. And they say, well, that would never happen in the Episcopalian church, or that would never happen in the Presbyterian church, or that would never happen in the blah, blah, blah church. I'm sorry. I'm not like most people. Most people, when they've gone to church, they've gone to the Baptist church their whole life, or the Pentecostal church their whole life, church. I've been around in all
And
kinds of
when,
denominations and non-denominations, and they're all the same, like you said.
there is nothing
Absolutely.
different. Whenever you think of the thread that binds them all together, you cannot look past patriarchy, misogyny, the way they set up the roles for men versus women. There is a definite common thread, no matter which end of that spectrum you are on.
And it is present. And once you have experienced that spiritual abuse, it's so easy to recognize it in these different institutions, in these different teachings. Like, there have been times where I'm like, I wish people would just send me a clip of their pastor. Because I literally, in a clip, I can point out the abuse just like that because I know what to look for. But they don't,
Most of the pastors now, like I was on YouTube and I would say, I always say I was raised in a cult, and I just happened to be scrolling YouTube, and the minister of the church I was raised in, they are starting to archive these older OGs of Pentecostal and different high controlled religions, their ministry and stuff. And when I went back, I wasn't sure if I could do it, but I went back and started listening to it, and I was like, mind blown, what I used to say amen to, and it happens to be that youth conference that he was teaching in, that he was teaching in. I was part of that congregation, and I'm like, oh, I was one of the young girls saying amen to all this.
Yes, it's the
It's
same way when I go
insane.
back and look at the notebooks, because I was a note taker in church, by golly. I took all the notes. And I go back and read those books, and it's like I am giving away every bit of my autonomy. I am not sticking up for myself. Like, it's all just put your head down, accept your circumstances, and trust that God's going to make things better for you. But it never got better. I never got better. I became more bitter. I became more frustrated. I became more depressed, but I didn't get better. Like, and I when I do look back on that stuff, I see a sad version of myself. Because I wasn't fully alive back then. I wasn't free. I was so depressed. I was so miserable. But it was because I was constantly looking for answers that I could never find the answer for, because I wasn't even allowed to ask those questions in those spaces without getting your hand slapped like a little kid, you know? And
So
you don't
David.
realize how much the fear in these places polices your behavior too, because you get to the point where you start to police yourself. And it's crazy, but go ahead, T.
No, that's okay. I was just going to ask, was there a single moment when you knew you could no longer stay inside traditional church structures, or was it just something that was slow and unraveling?
Many times.
Many times.
I left the ministry. I've left the ministry a few times, and by the ministry, I mean I left the Presbyterian one time. I left the Presbyterian ministry. I left the Vineyard finally in 2010. That was the last church I was a part of. I've been fired. I've been dismissed from different things. And again, like I wasn't like I was devoted to one denomination. I kind of moved around. But the common denominator for me is I don't like being controlled, and I don't like feeling trapped. And so one of the biggest lessons I ever learned in my life was I used to, when I first started the ministry, it was a Presbyterian ministry in the country. I had three little churches that I pastored, and they were like 150 miles apart. So I was very busy as a country pastor. And I was there 5 years, and the Presbyterian church liked my style of pastoring and all. And they asked me if I would plant a church where there wasn't a Presbyterian church. They had a certain location. They wanted me to go and plant a church there, like begin a Presbyterian church from scratch. And so I did. I went there and I thought, oh boy, I'll be able to create the kind of church I want and what I
Yeah.
believe is going to be. Within a year, I hated my job. I hated my job because what happened was all the old timer Presbyterians that didn't have a church came out of the woodwork and
Yeah.
came and demanded it to be this traditional. And I hated my job. I was so
Yep.
bored. I was so depressed. I was so discouraged and I felt so hopeless. And it was 2 years. I went to bed one night. I was like, I'm stuck. I have a wife and three little kids. They're all in
Yeah.
school. My salary, I was living in the church manse. I had a car bonus or whatever, all the car allowance,
Yeah.
all this kind of stuff, right? I felt completely and totally trapped.
Yep.
And in the middle of the night, I had a dream. Well, it was early morning. I had a dream and it woke me up. But in the dream, all I heard were the words, it's time.
Oh,
And I
wow.
woke up laughing my head off. Just laughing and laughing. And Lisa obviously woke, Lisa's my wife. She woke up. What's so funny? And when I could finally catch my breath, I said, we're not trapped. We can just quit.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay. The kids came running in. They all jumped on the bed. We were all laughing. And I did. A week later, I quit. We packed up our minivan and a trailer and just drove off into the sunset
Wow.
with no idea where we were going.
With nothing,
But
no idea or anything like this is my
I had no
goal.
idea. We just started driving, and
Wow.
the next
That's
2 years was the
unbelievable.
greatest of adventure of our lives. We had a lot of challenges, of course, but the biggest lesson
Yeah.
I learned was I wasn't trapped. I was only afraid of the consequences of living a
Yes.
free life.
Yes.
And that changed the way I approached
Yeah.
everything on, including the ministry, so that when I was faced with an abusive senior pastor or whatever, I was like, fuck this.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm
Yeah.
leaving,
Exactly.
and I
Yeah.
didn't feel any fear about that.
Yeah.
You can edit that out if you need
No,
to.
no, no. You're
No.
good. You're
Okay.
good. Listen,
Once
we.
you lose, and I have found in my deconstructing journey, once I Right.
lost the fear,
Yeah.
they don't hold any power over me anymore. It
That's
helped
right.
propel me
Yeah.
into feeling confident enough, empowered enough to speak my truths to power. It was just like an enlightenment, like walking through a fire and taking the step and knowing that I no longer had to be afraid
Right.
of the bounds and the binds and the chains that high-controlled religions bring in one individual's lives.
Well, I really do think fear is the number one tool to keep us in line and keep us a part of the flock and keep
Absolutely.
us on the straight and narrow theologically and all that. Fear is, that's why there's so much talk. For example, this morning I posted a cartoon with rainbow sheep and all that kind of thing.
Saw
And
that.
all the negative comments are, you're going to burn in hell. Like,
Yes, it's all
basically. And
fear.
I
Yeah.
was like, well, I'm in Canada where it's cold. That might feel nice. And, I don't care.
Exactly. Like, and the thing
I'm not
is
afraid.
and
Right.
that scares them, but that doesn't scare me. Like,
No.
I've lived through hell. I know what hell is like. I've survived it. So you
Yeah.
can't scare me with it now that I have deconstructed that. But
Right.
fear, I always say fear is a hell of a drug, man. It is a hell of a drug because it will have you saying and doing things and treating people in ways that you never thought you would treat other people, all because you're afraid to step out of line. And I
You're
found
afraid to lose your community. You're afraid to lose your God because that's what's really wrapped up in it. It's not like you're just, afraid of disappointing God, afraid of disappointing all the people that you share community with too. Right.
And that's ongoing too, because David, I don't know about you, but I know Heather and I, it's that fear is a way that once you've left, especially as a female, right, you have learned don't touch the prophets and do my, leave my prophets alone, don't do them any harm. So I
Yeah.
found that many of my years of deconstructing I did that solely by myself without ever saying anything out loud about the church, about the way the people acted, about the ministers of the church. I still had this reverence that I was too quietly indoctrinated to maintain silence because that was between them and God. And I'll never forget the first time I said their names out loud. That was a game changer. When I no longer walked with being afraid of what that minister, what that pastor, what the people of that church did, right? It did something for me to propel me to say, wait a minute, I am in control. I just didn't know it.
Yeah,
that that
one
was
thing
one of the
that,
biggest verses used on me all the time. Like, I was fired from a huge ministry for insubordination. And one of the biggest verses that was used on me a lot was, "Thou shalt not touch God's
God's
anointed."
anointed. To
Wow,
his prophets,
that's
no harm.
wild. I was
And see,
terrified of that.
that's what happened to me though when I first started speaking out online and deconstructing publicly and stuff like that. My mother-in-law was terrified. She called my husband, like, you need to be careful the things that she's saying on the internet. She's gonna curse herself, you know, because of that, don't touch God's anointed. You're not allowed to say anything. You're not allowed to call out their bad behavior. You're not allowed to call out the abuse. You're supposed to just pray about it. Well, honey, I'm done praying about it. There are bodies piling up. At some point, you've got to do more than just pray, you know?
Yeah,
Yeah,
praying is
well,
not backed up by actions. There is nothing to a prayer. And when you think of it that way and you break it down, right? If you pray for something, you're wanting an action for that prayer. And then you realize that you have to do it all yourself. So that prayer needs to just be, you know, absorbed within you, and you know that you're going to be able to make a difference in that situation in your life. And that prayer is meaningless. It's like, it
Yeah.
means nothing.
Another angle that was used on me a lot was that I was soiling the wedding gown of the bride of Christ, kind of thing. You know what I mean? And like, it's the bride of Christ. You can't say anything.
And you
But
know,
she's beautiful,
desecrated.
perfect, untouchable.
And we're
Desecrate holy
deceived.
ground.
So, you know, and that's what they tell us, that we're deceived. So when we speak these truths, they love to say that I'm deceiving people. You know, I'm a demon. I got called that the other day. And I just crack up when they call me stuff like this because I know it's their own insecurities, right? They have to defend and protect their faith, their own beliefs, because when we start educating on the harm that they're causing, they have to distance themselves from that somehow in some way. And that's how they do it. They do it by calling you a demon or a Jezebel or, you know, a false prophet, because then they don't have to listen to you or take you seriously.
And Heather, the best one was, and it'll be my all-time best until something else happens. When I went back to the cult in August, my brother looked at me and he was like, "You have desecrated my holy ground." And I'm like, "Well, God damn. I didn't know I could
Let
do
me
that."
keep desecrating stuff then. I'm gonna keep on. But that's how
It's weird
they
because
feel.
I think people, like, for example, let's say political cartoonists or whatever. I think they're not against politics. They're critiquing bad politics because they believe in good politics. And I'm, a lot of people are like, you left the church, like, what's it been now? 16 years ago. Like, let it go.
You're like,
But
oh,
I care. I care about all the people who were there. I care about community. I care about, gathering around common values, all that kind of thing. And I care a lot about the church. I say the church is like my mother, but I had to leave home. She was just too controlling, too demanding. But I still love her,
And
and
that's
I
the
think she
thing.
can do better.
And when we were, you know, in these systems, we were taught to love the church. We were taught to love the people of the church. And we know why the people of the church behave the way that they do, but that doesn't make them unworthy of love, you know? And that's the difference because we still see the humanity in those people, whereas they don't see the humanity in us at all. And I was raised again to love the church. So when I'm looking at the church and what she has become and how she's showing up in the world right now, that's not something to love. That's something to critique. That is something to call out. That is something that we have to do better and we need to demand better because the church right now is bleeding all over people that never even cut it, you know? And it's hurting everybody and on a mass scale. So, you know, I say this every week just about, but having these conversations is so important because a lot of people still laugh when they hear the term, you know, spiritual abuse or religious trauma. They think it's funny or it's made up. But here, I'm a survivor. Like I was part of that system for 36 years until it broke my mind, until there was nothing left. So, you know, when I came out of that, I had to rebuild and figure out who I was outside of that system. And that's not an easy path to walk for anybody. So when people
No.
just dismiss that, like it's nothing or it's non-existent, that's
And
harmful, you know?
when I think about me coming out, right? I kind of take the opposite end of the spectrum because there wasn't a person inside the 200 people church that didn't know exactly the reasons why I was leaving. And the fact that they stood, it wasn't that they didn't love me. It's that they refused with all evidence in front of them to even reach out and to stand with me. And so I look at the people of the church as part of the problem. Like if the women did not support and the women did not promote patriarchy, misogyny, there would be less DV, CSA, and SA sitting amongst the churches today. So whenever you know that somebody's leaving and you're in a church about 200 people, 250 people, and they raised you since you were a baby, right? My feelings are kind of torn there because it's like your silence cost innocence. And it's still costing the innocence of the babies and the women that are sitting on your pews, and you still refuse to use your voice to say anything, you know? So it's really
That's one
hard
of
for me
the
not to hold them accountable in some form, shape, form, or fashion, because I used to think I loved them, right? And then when I actually started thinking about what love really should be, I realized that their silence was violent, is violence.
I
Right.
one of the another big turning point in my life was when I was actively pastoring in a church. It's not far from here, actually, a vineyard church, and I picked up a book called The Lucifer Effect by Zimbardo, and basically his argument was that good people can do evil things when they're a part of a system. And what made him an expert in this actually was he was the one who, I don't know if you've heard of this experiment that was conducted at Stanford University, where they took students and some of them were to play act as prisoners and other students to act as guards in the basement of one of the campus buildings. And within, and they were all mentally, emotionally healthy students of Stanford. And they had to shut it down like within 1 or 2 days because it had gone completely off the rails. The guards had become very abusive. The prisoners were, you know, very depressed and abused and traumatized and so on. And his wife actually had to beg him to shut it down. And he became sort of an expert in this systemic evil kind of issue. In fact, he became a expert witness in the Abu Ghraib trials, where good American soldiers, good people, would become absolute horribly abusive and torture some of the prisoners, you know. And when I read that book, I was shocked because it was like, oh my God, this is what happens in the church, where the gravitational pull of all systems is towards the dehumanization of its members. And sometimes you just it just happens. And I realized my full-time job has to be prevent that from happening. That has to be my full-time job, right? And
It
that
becomes
to me
group
was a huge
thinking.
eye-opening experience. Yeah.
It becomes group thinking. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it is a group think. If you want to like study group thinking, let the
Yeah.
pastor say something, and then you can watch it over the congregation how everybody's going to start taking this new rule or this new policy or this new procedure to
Yep.
go about Jesus, right? And it with one saying amen and another saying amen and another one agreeing, it becomes this great big huge tank where everybody can't, it's impossible for them to think for themselves because they understand what the consequences are once they, if they disagree.
Well, I realize my own complicity when, because
Yes.
I'm a pastor and I'm a part of the system. And so I kind of have to be like a irritant,
Yes.
to
Yes.
a constant irritant, because
Yes.
like I really do believe the gravitational pull of all systems is
Yes.
towards that abuse of its
Yes.
members
I
just
can
to
see that.
survive.
Yes.
And I really do think that leaders of systems of all kinds, their number one job has to be to prevent that from happening.
Yes.
Most don't, because it's easier.
It is easy to go with the flow, stick your head down, keep your head buried in the sand, because that protects you. And you just have to worry about yourself and your family. But when you step outside of that system, it's not just you anymore. It's you, your family, your neighbors, the people living across the street, the people working at the Dollar Tree. You know, it's not just you anymore. You have to think of more people than just yourself. And that takes work. That takes
And if it becomes
accountability, you
right, and if
know?
it becomes a high controlled religion, right, and it's a woman l leaving that system, they lose instant babysitters, instant people who make their clothes, instant people who help with their outfits and making sure everything's done. They lose all community because they don't have any community outside those four walls if when it's a high controlled religion. So not only do you have somebody that's like stepping away and making a stand, but they just now lost every resource because they're a female now, a single mom with three babies. And there is nothing there. There is no way to go back into the flock because that door is automatically closed and you are erased. Then the only thing you can do is one foot in front of the other. You know what I'm saying?
In 2010, I left the ministry. In 2012, I launched an online community because I'd been out of the church for 2 years. I was very lonely, and I realized I wasn't the only one. There were a lot of people. This was before the, really deconstruction became a thing. I mean, I started talking about deconstruction in 2008
That's
because I borrowed
amazing.
the word from a French philosopher, Jacques Derrida. I thought, wow, the way he talks about deconstruction of text sounds exactly the way I'm feeling about my spirituality, my religion, the Bible, etc. And then I actually started my online community, The Lasting Supper, in 2012 for people who I said are deconstructing their beliefs. And the most of the members, and still most of the members, are women. Because they, and for me, these women are incredibly courageous. A woman who leaves the church is way more courageous than a man who leaves the church. And
I have seen that.
it's just, maybe that's unfair. But I admire women who leave the church because, like you said, there's such a network of support. And when you extricate yourself from that, you're going to
You lose
suffer.
everything.
So, yeah.
And
Ding,
it's not, and
ding.
people don't understand that when we walk away from these religious spaces, you know, we're not just walking away from a building. We're walking away from our entire community. Sometimes half of our family is in that church too, you know. You're walking away from all of that. And they teach that you're not allowed to be unequally yoked. So those people don't even know how to show up in relationship with you after you've left because they view you as a danger or a threat to their own salvation or their spiritual growth. It's crazy.
And you
You
become
know,
erased. You're a person that is erased. Like the first thing my mother and father made sure that was noted back to me was that all pictures were removed, all names were removed, all memories were removed. And they made a point to make sure that I knew that they left $1 in the will so I couldn't contest it.
Yeah.
That
And that's
happened to been,
you, really? In your
yes, 30.
family?
Yeah, it's 30 years and they've never spoken to me in 30 years. When I went to the cult, right, when I went back, I went to the church,
My brother was the first one who approached me, and he asked me what my name was. And this was just back in this August. And I asked him what his name was because I knew he was my brother. And he said, "Oh, that's Tobias." And I was like, "Well, what's your last name?" And he said, "Buchanan." He was like, "Well, what's your name? We're so glad to have you." And I was like, "I'm your big sister. I'm Tamara." And he was like, "I didn't know who you were."
Wow, that's a jaw dropper. Holy smokes.
Yes, it's wild.
It's
And
real.
you know,
What
we
happens?
I'm a lot like you. When I deconstructed, I was an evangelist. I was traveling around preaching to everybody, you know. And once I started learning more about, you know, how I'd been abused, how I'd been manipulated, you know, going to therapy and learning that I have religious trauma, I was a lot like you. Like, I have to do something to help other people that are still trapped in this system that are being harmed. Knowing what I know now, I can't be quiet because then I am just complicit, like everybody else that's quiet about all this harm. So that's why I started getting online and talking about stuff, you know, having in-depth conversations about the spiritual abuse, about misogyny, about patriarchy, you know, because all of these systems function together, they all work together. For the same reason, to control people. And fear is that mechanism that they use to keep you under control. And like we said earlier, you know, by the time it's in you, you're already policing yourself. You don't need an external force to police you. That thought is already in your mind, like, oh, if I have a glass of wine, I'm going to go to hell. So you don't need, you know, a preacher telling you that every single day. That thought's already there because it's been there since you were, you know, could start to walk and talk, basically. If you were raised in it like I was, I knew everything I wasn't supposed to do. I never knew what I was actually to do, though, in those spaces. I just knew that what I wasn't allowed to do and how I was allowed to show up. And even when I was preaching, it was the same way. I could say certain things, but I couldn't say everything. I could only say what they wanted me to say. I could only behave in the way that I was allowed to behave. And I remember going to certain churches and being told, "This church doesn't speak in tongues, so you can't do that here." And it was just little stuff like that of, okay, well, we can do God, but we can't do all of God. We got to reel it back for this particular location because these people are really different, you know? And then there were other places where I wouldn't get invited to preach at all because I was a woman and women aren't allowed to preach, you know?
You can
And it's just,
share.
it is. And it's
Oh,
just
we can
little stuff.
testify.
Yes.
Make sure it doesn't, we testify, but it has to be to the side of the
Yes.
pulpit. With a little tiny, like, laptop, you know, kind of holding thing with a very small, delicate microphone.
Yes.
Not
And
near the pulpit,
I
David.
remember growing up in a home. My dad was a pastor and his sister became a pastor. And oh, the way that he cursed her for being a female pastor. And women are not allowed to lead, they're not allowed to teach, blah, 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 blah. And now later in life, they're good friends and she's on his ministry board. But, you know, I'm going to hell in a handbasket because I actually tell people what Jesus actually said.
And Heather, where do you
go
where's
ahead.
your accent from?
So, okay, this is going to be crazy. And I was born in Pennsylvania, but I moved to North Carolina when I was 16 years old. So I got this Yankee Southern thing going on.
My wife's from Alabama. When I first met her at Bible College in Springfield, Missouri, I could hardly understand her, you know. But I gradually moved her north, and we live in Canada now, and she but right now she's in Alabama. Her brother's passing away, so she's there with him.
Oh,
But
I'm so
when we
sorry.
get on FaceTime or something, she has her little old accent put back, you know.
Right
It's
there,
like,
right?
I
Don't go
love it.
away.
So cute. Yeah.
I'm from, and I'm your neighbor. I'm like right across the Port Huron Bridge.
Oh, okay.
Man, not
Cool.
really your neighbor, but you know.
So, David, what took you from being, you know, full-time ministry to being out here on the internet, being this loud voice, helping people in deconstruction, making this incredible art? Like, how did you go from that place to that? Like, because it's such a huge shift.
Yeah, it is a huge shift. Although I started Naked Pastor back in 2005 while I was pastoring. And
Oh, oh, that's a little burner.
2005 was like pretty much the height of blogging,
Yes, it was.
a lot of pastors were blogging, and I thought, you know, I want my blog to stand out. I want it to be me. It's going to be totally me, totally honest, totally transparent. I'm going to pull back the veil on what happens in the life of a pastor and a church. You know, not just the great potlucks and gourmet coffee and donuts and the great sermons and worship music and
Apple pies
Bible
from Sister
studies and
Susie.
youth group, but I'm going to show the conflict, the financial struggles, the
Yeah.
arguments, my doubts and fear. So that's why I called it Naked Pastor.
I love
And
that.
you know, for a few years I flew under the radar, you know, not getting noticed at all. But in 2006, I thought, well, let's try cartooning.
Yeah.
I'd never cartooned before. Well, I did in school, like I would sketch caricatures of my teachers and stuff like that and get in trouble and all that kind of thing. But I thought, well, I'm going to try and communicate what I'm thinking about and feeling through cartoons every day. And I thought, I'm going to try and draw a cartoon every day. And I gave myself a month. I thought I'd run out of ideas, but here I am going 21 years later, I'm still cartooning every day. And
Wow.
that's when I started to get noticed, and that's when I started getting trouble.
Yeah.
But then in 2009, I had this profound experience where I saw and I felt the oneness of everything.
Yeah.
And you know, I wasn't on mushrooms or any other thing.
Yes.
It was just a moment I had where I just really, and I had been struggling theologically for many, many years, decades actually, ever since seminary. And suddenly all that was gone. It just dissolved. And I felt that peace of mind that I'd been looking for
Yeah.
so long. And I just started to naively share that in my blog and in my cartoons and stuff like that. And I started getting in trouble from head office.
Yeah.
And some of my own people were like, is he a Christian anymore? Like, you know.
Blaspheming.
And I think he's lost his anointing.
He's went off
And
the rails.
sure enough, a
Blaspheme
year
is the
later,
Holy
I was
Spirit.
gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I decided to see if I could make Naked Pastor a full-time
Yeah.
effort. And it took several years, but yeah, here this is what I do full-time.
And it's
Unbelievable.
incredible. Like
Yeah.
your art is just so phenomenal and impactful because you show people what the love of Jesus is supposed to look like. And I think that's one of the most powerful things about your art because it reaches a demographic of people that don't feel seen and don't feel represented or protected in religious spaces, which is the LGBTQIA plus community. And you do such an incredible job at, showing how Jesus welcomes them, how Jesus goes after the lost sheep, and the lost sheep is a rainbow sheep while he's leaving the bigots behind,
Yeah.
you know?
And I think
Can
it's
I?
important also to note real quick is
Yeah.
that for a lot of us deconstructing, I find that art, writing, poetry, the extra extensions of ourself become such a healing method for for our journeys that many of us humor, the things that many people wouldn't think that could be tools in our toolbox just become this beautiful thing to display and honor our journeys. So thank
You
you.
know, one of the things when I'm asked about it, I'd like to clarify a little bit is some people are like, well, you don't seem to be a Christian and yet you draw Jesus a lot. And so for me, it doesn't matter whether you believe Jesus was real or Jesus is the Savior or Jesus is the Son of God or Jesus is God or that Jesus, you
Yeah.
know, wasn't a
Nala.
historical figure or whatever. It
Whatever.
doesn't matter.
Yeah.
For me, I'm drawing Jesus in a way that people should sit would say, I'm inviting people to say, well, if there was a Jesus, this is what he would be
Yes.
like.
Yes,
Right.
exactly.
And
And
so when you know, today's cartoon is Jesus playing with rainbow sheep and trans sheep and everything on the slide. and a great diversity of sheep. And the whole point is that if Jesus is real or was real, that
Yes.
this is what I imagine he would be like as well.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
And I think
And
that's important, you know. I mean, I understand that I'm an anti-theist and, you know, pretty much a feral atheist woman, right? But I didn't start out that way. And once you get to know me, like the backstory, that's not really who I am or who I'm about. I very much appreciate people who can respect me as I respect them, you know. And I don't care where they land on the spectrum. What they think, what they believe, what they do, as long as they're okay, you know, respecting me as a person. And it's not respecting my labels. It just happens to be, makes it easier for the Christians to understand who I am, not
Yes.
me.
Right. It really is.
Well,
And, you know, we were talking about it earlier about labels. Like Christians love labels, right? Everybody has to have a label. You're either in the club or you're out of the club. And that's how they make the determination, is by putting a label on you. Well, I always say, like, since I deconstructed, labels are for canned goods. They're not for me. They're not for my spiritual practices. They just don't fit anymore. Like, since deconstruction, labels do not fit right now where I'm at in this season. So, you know, if you need a label, I'm probably not the person that you want to come talk to. But I believe that we should all be able to respect one another, you know, and see the humanity in one another, whether we hold the same beliefs or not. Because at the end of the day, that's what really matters. Are you a good person? Do you show up for other people? You know, do you show up for yourself even? Because my goodness, I was part of religious spaces for 36 years and didn't even know how to show up for myself, let alone show up for my community. And that was something that deconstruction had to teach me, was how to show up for myself. And then I was able to learn how to show up in a healthy way for other people. So, yeah,
Yeah,
that
that's one of my
matters.
cartoons is there's a bunch of cans on the beach, and one of them's on a like a chaise lounge, we
Yeah.
call them in Canada, you know, a
Yeah.
beach chair
Yeah.
lying down like this, relaxing, and he doesn't have a label on him, and there's a bunch of cans around him with Christian, atheist, you know,
Yeah.
whatever. And they're like, but what is he?
Right.
And that to me, like, labels aren't for what's inside the can, they're for the
No.
people reading.
Yeah.
And it's just,
Yes.
and a lot of people, when they need a label so they know how to be with you, right?
Yes,
Or how to
right.
talk to you.
Yeah.
And I don't have that. I don't care anymore.
No,
Not only about
exactly.
my own label, but I don't care about your label. I'm just going to talk to you as
Exactly.
a
Don't care
human
about you.
being.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Exactly. Now, was there ever a cartoon that you did that made you pause, like, ooh, I can't vote this one. This is going to cost me. Or do you always just approach it as being just authentic to your truths?
I have posted cartoons where I'm like, this is gonna stir up some
Yeah.
stuff, maybe. But I mean, I've gotten so used to that now that hardly ever happens. However, I do sometimes, once in a while, I'll hear from people who are saying, have you ever thought that this might be misinterpreted in this way? And I'm like, oh, and I'll
Oh.
say, you're totally
Yeah.
right. And
Yeah.
try to take it down if it's not too late
Yeah.
and edit it or whatever. That's
Okay.
happened a couple of times.
Yeah.
And
I can see that happening.
what's your most popular all-time cartoon out of all the ones that you've
Well,
drawn?
I've got a there's a few. There's a top 10 for sure, top 5 for sure. I think number 1 right now seems to be overturning, and that's where
Yeah.
Jesus is sort of
Flipping
like
the
an
tables.
action person and this
Yeah.
got his hands spread out and the tables and coins are flying where
Yep.
he's overturning the temple tables in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
I've got enough, and it's especially appropriate right now because a lot of
Oh,
people do want to
yes.
turn over tables.
Right.
The tables of injustice and so on. Eraser, where a bunch of people have fat pencils and they're drawing lines in the ground, and then Jesus has
Yeah.
his upside down and he's erasing the lines.
Yep.
That's another popular one. Another one is two women walking, and one woman asks, What's your spiritual gift? And she goes, swearing.
I love
I
it.
need to go find that
And
one.
then,
I'm
I'm
gonna like,
anointed, y'all. I'm anointed. That's what it is.
and are we allowed to print them out?
And
I was like, I'm gonna print that out and frame it and put it on my wall
you
somewhere.
actually can go onto his
Can
website and order the prints.
order
Yes.
them.
So anybody that's
Yeah,
listening,
I got
go to the
prints of
Naked
that
Pastor's
and
website. He's got
coffee
prints.
mugs and
You can even commission a custom piece from him. He'll do a custom piece for you. So that's really
Actually,
incredible
today's
too.
cartoon was a custom piece I was commissioned to do. Came up with that idea. Another one is
I'll do a
somebody,
custom
I call
one.
it the most sincere prayer, where this guy's kneeling at his bed praying and he goes, "Dear God, like what the fuck?" That's
One of the
another
other
popular
ones
one.
that you have that I really love, it's the couple in bed because of all
Oh,
the
yeah.
shame around purity culture,
Well,
right? You know, and that cartoon was so powerful for me in part of my deconstruction journey because I was like, oh my God, that is so right.
I've got a lot of those cartoons. I call them Sexy Sunday cartoons. I started them a couple of years ago. So I have enough to probably make a book on purity culture cartoons. But yeah,
Absolutely.
they, Meta and them are getting more and more prudish, so it's
Yes.
hard to get them past being banned and stuff. So
Yeah.
I think it's time to put them in a book and go in another
Yeah.
direction. But a lot of people have identified with the purity culture. It's huge. Yeah.
Absolutely. Can I
Because
digress for a minute and ask
patriarchy's huge.
something? Yeah, go ahead. If
Oh
I
yeah.
put in a request to custom do something with Jezebel, that's what you're talking about, I could do. Yeah,
I could
he will
do.
make you a drawing. He'll
I
make you
would
one.
love to
Yes.
do a Jezebel cartoon for
I
you.
want a Jezebel cartoon. I have been
I
like people come on, like my name is Tamara and we all
have
have
an
these
idea
biblical
for you
names.
already. I have an idea for you already. I do.
I'm gonna have to do this because they come on and they're like, how dare you? Like yesterday I was like, they're like, oh, we just have one question. It was like this older lady, and I was like, yeah. She goes, how dare you use that name out of the Bible as your name? Do you know she was the most evil, wicked, spirited
I have a
woman in the
perfect
world?
cartoon.
I
Barbara, I
was
have a cartoon for you. You've got to commission me to do it. You
like,
know,
I will. I
it's
will.
like
Oh my
people calling
gosh.
their kid Adolf, right?
Yes. Yes. Like, it's so dumb, right? Like, I just,
Yeah.
the things that they worry about are always things that don't matter, right?
Yeah.
We
And
can
because I
worry
love
about
it.
trivial things like music and TV shows, but we can't worry about kids getting harmed in religious spaces. We can't
Right.
worry about women literally being enslaved by submission theology, right? We can't talk about those harms. We got to talk about things that are so insignificant.
Jezebel spirit. I get it all the time. And I'll ask them, I'm like, well, do you know me? Do you know me outside of, social media? And they're like, no. And I'm like, wow, that was exactly why I took the name, to show how judgmental people are by just a name.
By
Yeah.
just a name.
By just a name. You don't know anything about me. You come on and attack me. I mean,
Yeah.
like vibes that you can't even imagine. And I'm like,
Yeah, well, I'm
you
named David, but
what?
that doesn't mean I raped a woman and murdered her husband.
Exactly, right? Like,
But
that's crazy.
and
Well,
David,
by the
I'll
way,
ask. talking about rape, yep, you guys heard about the 62 million,
Yes, we
right?
did. Oh
Oh
my
my
gosh.
God.
I am just.
And people say patriarchy, pff, there's no such thing. Rape culture, there's no such thing. That's, I hope, opens some people's eyes.
I hope so
Exactly.
too, because
Because
it literally is the patriarchy that sets up the environment for these men to continue to do these things and get away with it.
snap, I don't think if anybody knows that me and Heather were just getting ready to say the same exact words on cue. But then the other thing is too, is like David, they'll tell me they'll make all this big deal about Jezebel, but we had to be named biblical names in the cult I was raised. And I was raised Tamar. I'm Tamara. I'm King David's daughter. I was always told, like, then there's a story behind it, right? And I swear to God, no lies. My mother used to tell me that I was King David's whore.
Wow,
This
that
is
is
the
so
spiritual guidance I
atrocious.
got. But now that I'm Jezebel, I went
Yeah.
from an evil, from King David's whore to a woman with evil
Ahab,
spirits. I was just like condemned to hell from the get-go.
So,
Wow,
David,
you
we
guys have
asked this
stories.
question. We do, honey. I
Yeah,
promise you. We've seen some things. We've heard
we do.
some
You've been
things
around the
too.
block too.
Yeah.
So, I want to ask you, if somebody is just now starting their deconstruction journey, what kind of advice would you offer them?
Wear a helmet.
Beautiful, David. Thank you.
I say there's only one way to deconstruct, and that's your way.
Yeah.
So, number
Oh, that's
one,
good.
don't take other people's advice on how
Yes.
you should do it. There's no should.
No. And there is no deconstruction guide or
No.
deconstruction coaching.
No.
No, that is not a thing. You have to do this on your own, unfortunately. And it's not an easy journey to walk.
Well, no, that's the whole point. I know what you mean by unfortunately, but exactly that's the whole point of
Yes.
deconstruction
Yes.
is discovering your
Yes.
autonomy and
Yes.
self-determination. That's the whole point.
Yep. Discovering
So that
who
you
you
at, you know,
are.
when you're into deconstruction, you can say, you know what, I don't believe that
Yes.
bullshit
Yes.
anymore.
And it forces you to address fables and truths. If you're
Yep.
truly deconstructing, you have to come to a point that you say, this is not true,
Right.
but this is what I want to replace what I was taught that was to be true.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
it's not, and you know, people use that little coin word now, reconstruction, deconstruction, right? And yeah, I understand that and like the fluffiness of the word, but the hard work has to go in because you honestly
Yes.
need to make sure you know who you are and why you are who you are and what you believe and why you believe it. You become more concreted in what it is you do understand
Yes.
and want to be a part of your life. And I use belief because that's a Christian thing, you know, but you know what I'm
I
saying.
don't encourage reconstruction because the danger
Okay.
in that is that you're going to build another belief system
Yes.
that one day you're
Oh,
going to have
yeah.
to deconstruct as well. For me, deconstruction goes beyond belief. It's life beyond
It's a
belief.
forever ongoing process of things
Ongoing.
we have to deconstruct because, you know, I've been outside of religious spaces for 9 years now. I'm not done. Like, I'm not.
No,
It was just
no.
a few weeks ago that something else presented itself from that time, and I have to address that head on and be like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't
Right.
know that was there. What do we got to do to fix that and change our
Right.
behavior, you know, be better moving forward?
And for clarification, when I say reconstruction, I actually had to strip everything away and find out who I am,
That's
right? And give myself a foundation. So when I say reconstruction, I had to take away all the Christianity words and what their meanings were and how I was using them and actually get down to the bottom of actually who I am and what I am. And I'm comfortable with these things, you know, like having a foundation of being great, having grace, dignity, respect, honesty, those kind of things. When I say reconstruction is really where I'm pointing that to, is that when your foundation implodes, right? I really had to strip it all away and just let it be bare and say, I am grace. I am dignity. I am respect. I am vulnerable. I am these things. And then add those into my life to feel like something was more solid than what thus saith the word of God said. If that makes sense,
Absolutely.
that's where I came from.
Absolutely.
And it does
Yeah,
make
I like
sense.
that.
Because when our foundation is fear, we have to have a new foundation when we deconstruct, right? So we have to have something else in fear's place. So what is that going to be, you know? And for me, like I didn't know safety, I didn't know peace for 36 years. My nervous system was literally at a state of unrest for 36 years. So, you know, whenever people are like, oh, you just need to try a different church, I'm like, you're just offering me a different flavor of poison, but it's still going to kill me at the end of the day. So I'm not interested in what you're trying to offer because I now know what peace that passes all understanding actually is. And I also know that it's not available in those spaces that you're suggesting me to go be a part of, right? It
It's
is that
impossible to get
dog
away from
returning to its
scriptures.
vomit.
It's impossible once you're like been in Christianity to get rid of, to get completely away from their little clips.
Yeah.
It passes all understanding and it just rolls off our tongue 50 years
It
later.
does. It does because it's ingrained in you. Like
Oh,
the
yeah.
language, the sayings, whatever. Like I can't get away from them. I haven't been able to yet. One of my hardest words is blessed. What do you use instead of blessed? I have been blessed my whole life, blessed and highly favored of God. And I laugh when I say that because it's such a selfish way of thinking. It's a such a narcissistic way of thinking of I'm the only one that's blessed. I'm the only one that's favored. We used to tease each other in church and say, I'm God's favorite. Not you, me. I'm God's favorite. God chose me. And it's like, how dumb is that? This person beside you is saying they're God's favorite too. Like you're not any more special than they are. But it's seeing those dichotomies side by side that it's like, oh yeah, this isn't balancing out here. We need to deconstruct that
David, for those that are listening right now and they're terrified to ask questions or question their faith or start this journey, they're not quite sure if they believe or don't believe. What would you want them to hear first? What kind of advice could you give them to say, you know, sometimes those of us need permission. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's okay. Do it.
too. Well, again, that's what deconstruction is about. Is for me, it was a long journey of really getting to the place where I realized I didn't need permission anymore. That I was my own boss. I'm the captain of my own ship, the master of my own destiny, and that was what really deconstruction is all about. I know it's terrifying. I know. I remember the night when I decided I no longer believed in hell, and I couldn't go to sleep. Breaking out in a cold sweat because I was afraid to go there. And I didn't even believe in it anymore. You know what I mean? It's so enmeshed in our DNA, really, that it takes a while to get over it. And for the fear to subside. I mean, at first it shouts, and then after a while it becomes just normal talk, and then after a while it becomes a whisper, and after a while it becomes an echo, and then after a while it goes away. But it can take a long time. Some people it's overnight, you know, but
That's a beautiful
don't be
analogy.
afraid of the fear.
And don't be afraid
But you
to
will
ask the
experience it
questions.
though. It's like a monster under your bed. You know it's not there. So you just have to face it and realize you're going to get over it one day. You know, just enjoy the ride, you know, because when you get to where you finally think you should be, you're going to realize you were there the whole time.
Yes,
You are you here now and down the road. So it's so it, everything's okay.
I
Oh
just want
no,
to say
Moses.
thank you so much again for sitting down and having this conversation with us today. I am definitely going to leave your links in the show notes so our listeners can find you, find
Yeah.
your art and the things that
Thank
you
you.
put out there because you are such an incredible voice. And I
Thank
am
you.
just so grateful for all the work that you've done and that you continue to do. You know, you are reaching so many people across the world and giving them hope that they didn't even know was available. And again, it's just an honor to be able to sit down and have this conversation with you today and be able to share with our listeners, you know, your voice on these topics. So if you guys enjoyed this show, as always, please hit that like and subscribe button. We'll be back here again next week with another installment of The Awakening, where we're having healing conversations, where we're healing loudly together, one story at a time.
And thank you, David, for inspiring so many through your work and through your art. It is a pleasure to finally get to sit and talk with you regarding these issues. And it's an honor for
Thank
you to
you.
be a part of my journey. So thank you so much for
Thank you.
being here
It's
today
been
with
fun.
us.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yes.
Religion has many victims, and these are the stories of how they survived.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by the host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2026.